Hey folks, Jeff here, and welcome to the Daily Evolver. Today I am talking with somebody who's really actually turned out to be a very significant influence on me. And it's Paul Smith, who has been a pastor, a Baptist pastor, at the Broadway Church in Kansas City, Missouri for 50 years, is recently retired, and who has written a book that I'm really quite impressed with. It's a book called Integral Christianity, The Spirit's Call to Evolve. And first of all, I'd like to say welcome, Paul. Glad to have you join us.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, I as I said, I'm really impressed with your book, Paul. I mean, you talk about Christianity as it moves through the stages of development, and also the sort of an insight in teaching into worship using the three faces of God that I have to tell you, I mean, upon finishing your book, I actually feel more religious. I feel closer to God. I mean, it's a big statement for me. You know, I've been around the block with this Christianity. I was raised in it. I was a fervent little kid. I lost my religion. I came back to more, you know, cafeteria-style green religion. I've been through in the integral world, and I understand the, you know, integral view of Christianity, but I can't say I've ever had it transmitted as effectively and as beautifully as you do in your book. So thank you.
I really appreciate that, Jeff. I admire you, and partly I wrote the book for people who have had a Christian background and wanted some way to be more comfortable with that in the integral world. And so that's neat to hear. I was thinking before you called that we both have a similar interest. You've described yourself as a news junkie, which I think is wonderful. You have this wonderful interest and aliveness about current events and a breadth of knowledge and awareness of them that I simply don't have, and you're able to converse with people from various walks of life about these things. And it's your kind of news is about how the Spirit is working and what new ways in culture and politics and the social world. And my news junkiness is focused on how the Spirit is working, what the Spirit is doing and evolving us in understanding and accessing God in our spiritual paths, and in particularly in Christianity and the whole conveyor belt, or I call it the escalator, of taking a traditional religion and moving on up to integral version. And so anyway, it seemed to me we both have this interest in the news, and it's just the news in one area that you're interested in, and news in the other area I am.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see, you know, evolution happening in real time. And
yeah.
One of the things I love about your book is, I'll probably mangle it a little bit, but you said something at the in the earlier pages that one of your theses of the book is that God is always up to something new. And I love that.
That's right.
Yeah.
The only thing you can say about God is God is always up to something new. Yes.
Yeah. So why don't you give us a little bit of context, a little bit of the breadth of your view of maybe religion in general or the spiritual life in general, Christianity in particular, and take us up to what you think God is doing new at this point.
Yeah. Well, I was raised, I was enrolled in a Baptist church nursery before I was born. So I was a Southern Baptist, raised in a Southern Baptist tradition, like Ken Wilber and like many people in Integral, and stayed with that, and went to Southern Baptist Seminary, and became the pastor at a Southern Baptist church 50 years ago. And I was a benign Southern Baptist. That is, I was always questioning things and sort of on the edge of things back then. And as the years went by, it evolved, and I was fortunate enough to have a congregation that was willing to evolve with me. Most of the time, if pastors want to grow spiritually, the congregation will only go so far, and then it stops, and then the pastor needs to go to another church that's more that's in a different place to where they are. But my congregation, actually, I stayed, and often the congregation left. We come to various changes, and some of the congregation wouldn't be able to go along with them. But always the majority of the congregation was willing to, for instance, move from the men-only pastors to also including women pastors, from thinking of God entirely in masculine terms to using feminine imagery and language for God and our worship and hymns and the way we talked and lots of things like that. The final straw was about 10 years ago when we the gays in our congregation said, "Paul, you've changed your mind about so many things. Would you read the Bible and change your mind about that God's really okay with us as being gay?" And I said, "Well, okay, I will." And I did, and thought I have been entirely wrong in my position that there was something wrong with being gay. And so the congregation went through a 2-year period of discussing that and so on, and we made the change, although we lost a lot of members in the process. But anyway, I had gone about as far as I could as a postmodern Baptist, and was thinking, well, you know, is there anything else God wants to teach me? And about a dozen years ago, came across the Ken Wilber and Integral Philosophy, and I was just astounded. I devoured it. And then I, with the integral eyes, began to read the New Testament, and particularly Gospels, and I'm a Jesus scholar. That's my focus of interest in terms of scholarship. Again, and I found all sorts of new things coming to life. And one of the thing that probably has stayed with me the most and most changed my church and me and my own worship practices, my own spiritual practices, has been the three faces of God. I think I told Ken in an interview not too long ago that I thought that was the most significant breakthrough in our understanding of God for Christians since the Nicene Creed in the early 4th century.
Which was the formulation of the Trinity.
Yeah, right, which said, hey, God, you know, it wasn't strict monotheism. They at least allowed Jesus into being God, and that was a great step forward. And then as I looked at that, I realized that thinking of God as a father and thinking of God as Jesus or an avatar or a deity form and the spirit, those are all second-person relationships. And so theologians had tried to expand Father and Spirit and years because they knew they needed to have some bigger picture than that, but it never fit. And then here was Wilber with the three faces of God, where there's God in third-person perspective, where we're thinking about God in infinite ways and incredible panentheistic ways that God is in and beyond everything. And the second-person face, the we space of a relationship with God, God as a being. And first person, where God is not a being, but being itself. And then it hit me that this was Jesus' approach too. Matter of fact, I got it down to 14 words. I call it the 14 words that changed my life. Jesus talked about God, to God, and as God, and he said we can too. And
yeah.
Jesus talked about God. There's the third person face of God. Jesus talked to God in what we call prayer, and then Jesus spoke as God, as the great I am, and his own identification with God, and really modeled for us that we are all God's children. Matter of fact, in this Christmas season, I love Christmas, and it's a great time, but its message is very limiting. The early Christians, of course, didn't get around to celebrating Jesus' birthday for about 300 years, because what was important to them was his message and his life. And the message that comes out in Christmas is that God came into humankind and human life in Jesus and in Jesus only. And the angels sang, and there was a big hubbub about it. Well, I think every time a baby is born, in the world, the angels sing, and God comes into life here. And so it's not limited to just Jesus. And so that's the first person experience of God, that Jesus said that he was the light of the world, and he also said we're all the light of the world, that we're all gods, or we're all divine in our deepest essence, past our egoic personalities. And so that was transforming to me. It like, wow. So here's my theological study, which is about God. Here's my prayer life, which is to God. And then I started associating with all you integral folks, and you all meditated. And it was the first time I'd been around a large group of people that took spiritual practice really seriously. And I thought, well, you know, here I mumble a prayer in the morning and go off to my work, and now I'm around people who they sit on their meditation pad for an hour a day. And I thought, by golly, if I'm going to learn anything from a Buddhist, it's better I'm going to learn that. And so I began my own personal spiritual practice, daily practice, and that has really transformed my life. And I wasn't sure what to do. It was interesting that most of my integral friends meditated. And I was learning to meditate, that is to sit in quiet and silence and to move past the forms and just come into a sort of a beingness. But I also like to pray, that is to talk to God. And God, as I say, God as a being in some form. And I found my integral friends were embarrassed to pray. That is, my Christian integral friends who had some familiar with Christianity were, that was kind of like, oh God, that's an old evangelical, you know, talking to Jesus stuff. We can't have that around. And what I found in the three faces is that Wilbur put it beautifully together. All three faces are important. None is more important than the other. And so prayer, a relationship, a love relationship with God in some form that's meaningful to us as father or mother or grandfather or Jesus or Krishna or Buddha or somebody. And then the deeper meditative state that leads us into a causal consciousness, and then ultimately to a non-dual opening or awakening, which also Jesus taught, is they're both important, and there's no reason to hold one above the other. I came across the Wilbur. Ken likes to quote Buber and his I Thou as an example of a second person relationship with God. And Martin Buber began as a non-dualist. He thought that his experience of non-duality and understanding of that was the highest realm to go. And eventually he changed his mind and thought the relationship with God, duality, was the highest form because it involved love. And so now I would disagree with him there. I think they're both important. And so what the three faces did is it gave me a place to have a relationship for me. Primarily it's with Jesus, and with his relational connection was with God as Abba or Father or Daddy, and those are the two most meaningful ones to me. And to have that very loving personal relationship and to set with Jesus. But by the way, some years ago I added the Gospel of Thomas to the Matthew, Mark, and Luke and the John and the scriptures. Matter of fact, I printed up copies of it and told my congregation to put it in their Bible right before Matthew. And one of the great verses in Thomas, because Thomas is all about non-duality and about integral stuff. Thomas said, Jesus said, whoever drinks from my mouth will become like me. I myself will become that person, and hidden things will be revealed to him. And so that's what I found in second person prayer, is I would sit with Jesus. Eventually that's how I moved into a non-dual opening, is, I guess the Eastern traditions, if you're set with a teacher, they transmit their consciousness to you. And I found that Jesus transmitted his non-dual consciousness to me in a way that eventually allowed me to enter into that. And then all sorts of new things opened up. Jesus' main theme of teaching was the kingdom of God, which is simply non-dual consciousness. There's no other way to understand that. So these three faces gave me a permission to think about God, to talk to God, and then to realize in my deepest self I was God. And
yeah.
I was an expression of divine beingness here in the world, as you are and as every person is. And even in duality, we're not separate. I call it non-separating duality, we have the love relationships, but just because they represent duality, we're not separated from one another. So that has revolutionized my spiritual life. I taught that to my congregation. Our musicians wrote hymns about God in three dimensions. We sing them on Sunday mornings. We even have hand motions. The Catholic the cross, the sign of the cross, Father, Son, and Spirit, which is a pretty smart deal. When you somatize your theology, it really gets into your heart and your body and your brain. And so we have hand motions that go with the third person face of God, which I call the infinite face of God, and we raise our hands up at wide to signify infinite space. And then to the second person face of God, I call the intimate face, and we hold our hands in a prayer of, in a posture of namaste or prayer. And then the first person face of God, I call the inner face of God, and we put our hands over our heart. And so whenever we're singing one of our new hymns, we don't diss the traditional Trinity, we just don't use that exclusively anymore. We sing rather about the first, second, and third faces of God, infinite, intimate, and inner, and we do those hand motions with it. So that's with me every day, and it's become, as I teach around the country, hold workshops on integral Christianity, that's become the thing that has most grabbed people as I share.
Yeah. It's just brilliant the way you work with it in your book, and you just talked beautifully about it just now. And I think your point about the integral world space and the people who are in the sort of integral movement, it's the second person that is the most tricky. I mean, we can all see the universe. There's even sort of a scientific understanding of the vastness of the universe and the infinite face of God, that what you call the wondrous face of God, that third person, that's easy enough. And of course, because most of us come up through the postmodern meditative, we go back to some of the Eastern traditions, we can get this sense of our own divinity and have non-dual realizations through our spiritual practice. But this idea of actually, as you say in your book, and I love what you said, that there's a divine intelligence that appears on the sofa next to us and starts a conversation.
Yeah.
That second person, and it's not just, sort of the loving intelligence. You know, there's certain creative principles that we can sort of wrap our heads around. It's actually an eye thou. It's another person. Now, it may not be an old man in the sky, but it's another person. And I always think the difference is, I run into people in the integral world, and they can talk about loving God in a certain way, but the idea that God loves them back, personally, specifically, in real time, that's a little more problematic.
Yes, it is. If you have God as only being itself, it's hard to be loved by that, because love implies a relationship, a genuine being, a being to another being relationship. And so that's what gives it flesh and blood. And I think that's what Jesus did so marvelously, as do other avatars, as does Ganesh or Krishna or others. There's a love is relational. To feel loved means you have to feel it, love coming from another being, not from a principle or a concept.
Yeah. And that this being, and you make the distinction in your book about the difference between theism, pantheism, and panentheism.
Yeah.
And that you would be more in that third category, if I'm right, which is that God is not just outside of the universe, that God is not just the universe itself, but God is both, immanent and transcendent, which is panentheism. And that there is an aspect and a dimension of God that existed before the Big Bang and exists outside of time and space. Correct?
Well said. Well said. Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's panentheism. I believe that's the most helpful way we have of thinking about God now. Almost all modern theologians, contemporary theologians like Marcus Borg and others, they think pantheism is the most helpful way to think about God. That's a third-person apprehension of God. Yeah, yeah. But not leave it there, to move to that second person. I think the reason there's a number of reasons why second person is difficult for those of us who've been in the postmodern stage. One is we've carried a lot of that old baggage of evangelical Christianity, where prayer is begging a God up there to do something out there, and that's not integral prayer. Integral prayer is devotional prayer. It's a love, it's a lover, loved relationship. It's a beloved relationship where there's love and there's communion, and if we're asking for anything, it's for help to surrender our egos and to genuinely lay down our lives. It's very hard to surrender your ego to infinity.
Well, that's right. And I think that's actually the bright line, or the distinction for me with prayer, is that the old embarrassing prayer is the one where you ask for something. The prayer that actually works is where you ask to do, you know, thy will, not my will. You ask for the ego to be, you know, dissolved or transcended or superseded, not for the ego to be rewarded in some way.
Very well said. Very well said. And so that making that distinction, I think, helps people distinguish a traditional prayer, mythic level prayer, from integral prayer. I call integral prayer devotional prayer, and devotion is what gets our juices going. It's so motivating. Devotional prayer is a quick start way to enter into accessing God. It takes a while to move from a subtle level to a causal level of emptiness or formlessness or to non-duality. But if you've got a prayer life, you can sustain. It gives you energy to keep moving on to do the other. I think another reason it's difficult for those of us who've been in the postmodern pluralistic realm is we so value that there are many paths to God, and that we don't see Jesus, or however a Christian might express that personal relationship with God, as the only way to God. And so when you get a bunch of integral people together and you're going to pray, who do you pray to? And so it's easy for those of us who teach. I mean, I find myself on this call. I mean, to what extent do I talk about God coming to us in personal form, which is, that could apply for anybody, for a Buddhist, for a Hindu, for anyone, or do I talk about my own Christian orientation of God coming to me in the form of Jesus? And I find myself, I kind of hesitate because I don't want anybody else to feel excluded. And so the second person face of God, our practical spiritual practice experience, will be different. I have a friend in Pune, India, who was raised as a Christian, but she was about ready to become a Christian as a teenager, and Krishna appeared to her at the foot of her bed in all his blue skin glory, and she gave her heart to Krishna. And I told her that was how wonderful. So when we talk, she talks about Krishna and I talk about Jesus, and it's okay. But if you get a conference of an integral spirituality, you can all meditate together. But if you're going to all pray together, it's difficult because everybody will have a personal being appearing to them, and so it's just messier, and it gives the impression. Therefore, teachers and leaders like myself, we tend to sort of avoid that, and it gives the impression it's not important. But meditation is the only important spiritual practice.
No, that's a very good point. It's just a very practical point, isn't it? Just about how we deal with each other in this multicultural world.
When I was talking with Ken, for instance, I said, you know, you seldom talk about your subtle level spiritual practice where you talk to a deity form. And would you describe that? And he went and described how he visualizes Buddha, and he sees Buddha as energy, electrical, light-filled energy flowing from Buddha to him. And it was just beautiful. And I know he doesn't talk about that very much because it seems to exclude other people. And what I said to him was that I was so moved that he shared that, and that I experienced a similar thing, only it was Jesus with me, and I feel that energy coming from Jesus. And,
well, Paul, you know, you're a Christian minister. You've been doing this for a long time. Is there a qualitative difference between prayer to Jesus? And, you know, I talk to my Buddhist friends. I have a degree. I did deity practices for years myself.
You do?
Yeah, I went to Naropa for several years and have a degree in Indo-Tibetan Buddhism and did a lot of Buddhist practice around deities where you're, you know, relating to deities. Now, the way they see it at Naropa, at least, and this is more of a postmodern view of Buddhism, is that when you're dealing with these deities, you're actually dealing with aspects of your own mind. You're not really dealing with a true I, thou, other. But yet, I've talked to Buddhists who do see a real I, thou, other, and from what you're talking about with Ken, that would be in that category. So, you know, what's the difference between, or is there a difference between these kinds of deity practices and a relationship with Jesus?
Well, that's a very profound question. And as a matter of fact, Corey is working on my next post to come out here about, I'm doing a series on prayer right now on the posting. And it's called
On Integral Life.
There? Yeah, on Integral Life posting. Is anybody there? So who are we talking to when we pray? And it can be any of three or four or five things. One, anytime you're talking about relationship, it can be rife with projections. You know, we could be just talking about some projection of our anger or some projection of something else. Or it could be talking to our higher self, that is, that higher inside self that we are. Or we could be talking to what some call now a co-creation, that is, a sense of a personal relationship with God that is both created by us and by the Spirit. So there's an element of, as we sense God's presence, we interpret that presence in the light of our culture and our understanding. And so that gives a blend of ontological reality and also interpretive quality. So that we, in a good nod to a postmodern sensibilities, realize that we are always interpreting whatever our experience is, even objectively. Or another possibility that I hold out is that we are talking to an actual ontological reality, and I use Ken as an example, since Ken believes in reincarnation, although he hesitates to admit that. If you do, what you're believing there is that a being is transmitted from life to life. So if that's an ontological reality, I have no trouble believing that a being that existed 2,000 years ago, Jesus, who died and then appeared in subtle level reality in the resurrection, is still around and can still be with me, and it's the same being. And same way might be true of a relative who's passed on, or of it could be Buddha. So I hold out that possibility, and therefore we have to determine the cosmic address of any being we're praying to. So to help establish where that's coming from, and to what degree it's a projection, our higher self, a co-creation, or perhaps an ontological reality. And everybody has to decide that for themselves. So I put my address of talking to Jesus, or I also, the other form I have is a sense of God as daddy, a presence as father, as I think you have a sense of a presence. And the address for that is a subtle level, a second person perspective, and non-dual consciousness, which is what Jesus prayed from. Jesus said, God and I are one, and I pray that everybody else will realize their oneness with God. That is, from a non-dual place, he talked to God as a father. And so it's a good question, and I would hold that I don't have any argument with people say, well, I'm really talking to my higher self. That's not the way I experience it. And I think there's enough evidence of people, mystics through the centuries, to shore up the possibility of that being an ontological reality, along with other Mary. I think Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of Jesus have appeared to people, and also the sense of God's presence as mother and father. I think they have a lot of validity. And since I'm not acquainted as well with Hindu or Buddhist thought, I would certainly allow them the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like to me, personally, it's the cutting edge of my own spiritual development, is that I really have no problem. It's pretty easy for me to see these, particularly the Buddhist deities, which I'm more familiar with, as being aspects of my own mind, personifications of my own subpersonalities, and it's very useful to see that.
Yes.
It helps me differentiate and tease my own psyche apart in ways
yes.
that are liberating. But what's more challenging to me, and yet it feels very appealing and attractive to me, is to, when you're talking about Mary appearing or Jesus appearing or whatever, to think, wow, maybe that's an ontological reality that's outside of my mind, or that
sure,
is something other than my mind. And geez, is that possible? And there's
well,
part of me that says, nah, you know, that's just, you know, childish stuff. But I think there's a way of looking at that that's actually post-rational, if you will, not pre-rational,
absolutely.
Post-rational. Yeah.
And that's the second person face of God. See, if we're going to not favor or not do quadrant absolutism, we're not going to make first person face the real face of God, but we're going to make first, second, and third person faces all real, then the second person face is also real. It's as real as the first person, our own spirit or self as divine. Second person is also real. It's just as real. And if it's not, then what we have done is we have decided to favor or give priority to a upper left quadrant, and
mm-hmm.
that's a no-no in integral. So if we take Wilbur seriously, that all three are important, all three are real, then that second person possibility of it being an actual being that still exists as we exist. We're real. You're real. I'm talking to you. We're having a we space right here. I can do the same thing with however God comes to me in personal form, because God is love, and love is always personal. It's transpersonal, but it's not. It's personal plus, not personal minus.
Yeah. So, which brings me to the question I always want to ask, and I never do. So I'm going to ask you, Paul. What happens when we die?
And before you answer, let me just share a little bit about what I'm thinking. Part of it is I just came back from spending a week in Salt Lake City. I was actually doing a Zen meditation retreat of all things in Mormon country with Diane Hamilton and her Two Arrows Zen Center there. But I also, you know, you're saturated in Mormonism, and we went to the temple and Temple Square and all of that sort of thing. I was just thinking a lot about it. And one of the things that is, you know, a basic tenet of Mormonism is that we personally survived this death, and that I'm Jeff now and I'm Jeff then, and you're Paul then, and I'll know you as Paul then, and I will be with my family, and I will be with the people I know, and that I will continue to exist, but just in a, you know, another level or plane of existence that may be as hard as granite and just as real as there as this is here. And you know what? I'm thinking, I don't rule that out anymore. I used to think that was childish. I don't anymore. So what do you think?
Well, there's an integral word for that. Ken, an integral has just recently embraced the theoretical construct for that, which is unique self. That within the fabric, the inner fabric of our absolute divine self is our unique self, which is that true self, who we really are, which emerges after we let go of our ego. And that is a unique self. There's nobody else that has the same unique self that Jeff Saltzman has, because you have lived this life, and maybe many others, from a unique position that nobody else has, and that continues on forever, forever and ever. And so, to me, unique self is the integral acquiescence or even embrace of the continual uniqueness and beingness of our own individuality. So it's a non-separate duality that I think is as eternal as non-duality. And the unique self gives us a way of postulating, framing it theoretically. I mean, you're familiar with unique self. To me, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, you know, we'll have our bodies even, maybe?
Well, I think we the material world does change radically, and one day may evolve into something else or disappear. So I think the subtle realm and the causal realm and the non-dual realms are more lasting. But certainly that unique self can come and inhabit form at any time, which would account for reincarnation, if you want to go that route, or would account for a continued existence in a realm we would call heaven or life after death. And I think enormous, massive evidence from near-death experiences, from Stanislav Grof's experiments with people and contacting the other side. I have, in my own subtle level experiences, walked into the tunnel of light, touched the sides of the tunnel. It's very, very real. And I could see how at the end of that tunnel, I'll still be me, but it will be me without this current body. And so I don't actually integral brought me back around to seeing that I think we do go on forever as ourselves in our unique self form.
Yeah, me too, actually. And I'm at the point now where I'm not even ruling out the gross body. You know, maybe it's
I'll
not
work on that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's maybe I'll finally lose that 10 pounds, you know, that I've been working on.
That's great.
But
I love
who
it.
Knows? I mean, you know, here's what really opens me up to it, Paul, is if you really just stop for a minute and look around and realize, wait a second, this life is a miracle. This world is a miracle. You know, why wouldn't there be further miracles? Why do we just get one? And so that's where, I haven't clenched on any explanation. I just, at this point, have far more of an open mind to these things than I ever thought I would. And it feels good. It feels liberating, and it feels right to me. So, you know,
we'll just keep
meditating
and praying
that.
On this.
And I also, I believe that's an integral position that is fully compatible with the three faces of God and with the unique self. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which
brings me to my final question that I wanted to ask you, and that is, you talk a lot about integral Christianity. Of course, that's the name of your book, The Spirit's Call to Evolve is a subtitle. So what's your take, Paul, on what is integral Christianity as opposed to postmodern Christianity? And by the way, in your book, you brilliantly walk up from the magic, mythic, traditional, modern, postmodern, beautifully, really, I learned a lot about how Christianity has taken that escalator up to postmodern Christianity. So what do you see as the, distinct characteristics of integral Christianity and maybe just integral spirituality in general?
Well, thank you for the affirmation, and that's a really profound question, since differentiating postmodern from integral, I think, is a primary task that we have to do without moving back into that old traditional thing of excluding. I mean, if somebody wants to call themselves integral and they're really postmodern, well, okay, it ought to be okay. but I think we do need to distinguish. And one of the primary differences is that integral is willing to distinguish the partiality of truth, that some truth is more true than other truths, and some things are good, but there are other things that are even more good. Postmodern just has trouble with any kind of hierarchy. And of course, we all have trouble with dominator hierarchies, but natural hierarchies are just a part of nature. And so we all have to find that which is the most true for ourselves. And I believe integral has some ways of helping to distinguish that. And it does that by defining integral as at a higher level of evolution, a more evolved consciousness than postmodernism is. And then I think integral, once again, the three faces of God is an integral concept, not a postmodern concept. And things like that are just in such a deeper, more profound realm than anything I find in postmodernism. Postmodernism, I call it flourishing and flailing. It is flourishing in that it has brought about so many wonderful things, the acceptance of gays and women and equality and all sorts of things. But it's also flailing. It keeps us stuck in a kind of a flat land. And so I think the integral brings all the dimensions, like the heart dimension of devotional prayer. It brings the intelligent scientific dimension of science. It brings the non-dual consciousness. It brings dimensions that postmodern just can't get to. So
would you say, Paul, that one of the things that postmodern has the most trouble with is that second person? That there is actually an ontologically real post-mythic being, if you will, that sees
That's
me and
right.
loves me.
Absolutely, because each stage, of course, is always in reaction against its previous stages. And postmodernism is really reacting against traditional Christianity. And traditional Christianity has got the second person more right than wrong, although it's got a lot of baggage with it. So we have to get rid of that baggage. But as long as they're in reaction to a traditional idea, they can't embrace that fullness of second person. So I think you're right.
Yeah. And then, do you have any thoughts on post-integral? Where do we go from here?
Well,
I mean, will we be flying around? Will we be hearing voices that are actually other? I mean, what's up? What's next?
Yeah, I think so. I think
something like that, huh?
As the Bible says, the mind has not thought of or not even imagined the things that are yet to come from spirit. And yes, I think so. Integral has not emerged yet enough to see its weaknesses and to see which way the pendulum will swing next, I think. But the states of consciousness of subtle and causal, and then the gateless gate of non-dual opening, I think just when we reach a critical point there of enough people operating in those states, there'll be a gigantic leap forward. I think we're on the cusp of that, and what you and I and the other people involved in this are doing are right on the growing edge of that. It's very exciting, and your aliveness is a part of that excitement for me too, Jeff. It's wonderful.
Well, I feel alive, and I feel excited, and I never thought that I would come to this place that in some way feels like, you know, as T.S. Eliot says, coming back to the beginning and knowing it for the first time.
Isn't
you know,
that the truth?
And yeah, and that, you know, part of integral, even if we use just basic integral theory, is that we would actually bring forth some of the magic from the very earliest stages of development, only it would be in a post, you know, integral, post-rational way that, but no less magic. And so, you know, it's, I agree with you, it's yet to emerge, but I'm excited and just happy to be on the cutting edge of it. And I got to say that your book really moved me, Paul. Not only moved me in the typical way, but moved me forward developmentally. I feel like I know things that I didn't before, and I got a transmission that is a permanent acquisition of my own spiritual development. So I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for that.
Well, I am blessed by what you're saying. Thank you, Jeff.
You bet. So, Paul, for people who are interested in this, how do they find out more from you? Do you have a website? I know you're on Integral Life. How can we get more?
I have a website. It's revpaulsmith.com, revpaulsmith.com. It's a little out of date. I'm going to update it, and I'm also working on a second book.
Oh, really? What's the book?
Well, I think it's going to be on the three faces of God and prayer and all the stuff we're talking about. And then my my posts on Integral Life and the series on prayer right now is just the stuff we're talking about. That would be another way to access. And also, I get emails from all over the world all the time and have wonderful conversations with the Integral folks, and I welcome that at any time.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Paul, and in this Christmas season, this feels like a very appropriate conversation, and I just wish you a Merry Christmas and a great New Year, and together we'll see what is next and be part of it. So thank you again.
Thank you, Jeff. By the way, let me mention my email. My email is paulsmith@revpaulsmith.com.
Got it. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, folks, for listening. See you next time.
Bye.